All right. I'm ready to move on to the next question. Eric, did you have anything you wanted to say before that? I wasn't sure.
I'll be right on.
Okay. Right on. Okay. You mentioned overhead a second ago, and obviously you guys are also in a partnership. I want to focus for a second on a couple of those issues because let's be realistic. Let's back off of the gross numbers now. Let's look at net. And I'm not trying to pry too much into your business and personal affairs. Well, I guess I am. That's what I said I was going to do, so I'm going to do it. Give us an idea of the overhead that you guys have right now in your business, if you don't mind, and where the bulk of it is. Like, what kind of overhead? What are some of your biggest expenses and why? And then after that, I think I'm going to ask you a little bit about the dynamics of your partnership. But go ahead with the overhead.
Okay. The overhead, typically right now, it's very low. I mean, it's something where I said it was high, but let me kind of reiterate why it's high. We've been dabbling in some rehabs and some rental property that were, you know, some of these properties we do buy and fix up a little bit, and if we can't sell them, which we always sell them, but we usually, you know, if we want to keep it in the beginning, we usually plan on it. So what I mean by overhead is if we bring in, let's say we made a $20,000 profit, me and Eric try to get out there and buy a $10,000 home as a rental or something. So even though it's part of our overhead, or, you know, we consider it part of our overhead, it's really going towards doing remodeling, and paying our bird dogs, referral fees, and also we are S Corporation. Me and Eric pay ourselves a salary. We have marketing costs because we do some mail drops. So, I mean, and like I said, we do list our properties with agents. So we do sell some properties on the MLS, and part of our overhead is our MLS fees that we pay out, like commissions. So it's kind of all good overhead. It is something that eats up your profits because it's kind of in another home that you're waiting to cash out on. So a lot of our overhead is under $5,000 a month, but we are doing some rehabs and referral fees and listing properties on the MLS.
All right, and that's important to bring out. I mean, you know, anybody in the real estate investing world will watch, you know, a TV show like Flip That House or Property Ladder, and when they bring the numbers up, you know, you kind of look at them sideways and go, you know, they mention the potential profit, and you go, well, where's the realtor's commission, and where's the
right.
where's the holding costs? Yeah, the closing costs. You know, they're not talking about the mortgage payments for 6 months or whatever. So, Eric, anything you would add to that?
Yeah, actually, around our office, it's what we consider, we call it the velocity of money. And it's something to where if we make money today, you know, say we make $20,000 on a flip that we did, it's not like it just sits in our bank account. We can just kind of open up our online statement and look at it at any time. We got it going into rehabs. You know, we do have some marketing costs and stuff like that. And we're just trying to shift money as fast as we can, get it back out there into the streets, providing jobs and income and purchasing other properties. So what we call the velocity of our income. We put money to work as soon as we get it. So you don't get to realize it all the time, but it is constantly in motion.
All right. Let's talk about your partnership. Partnerships are a tricky thing, guys. I've been involved in a few of them. And how long have you guys been partners now?
About 3 years. I mean, we were kind of verbal partners as, like, agents together and kind of with the internship. A lot of people know us in the area as Steve and Eric. It's just everywhere on our marketing and stuff like that. But we have been a partnership with Michigan Property Superstore Incorporated for about a year now.
Okay, and how do you have that structured, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I mean, we do have an attorney that structured the escort for us. But as far as the agreement between me and Eric right now, it might not be as professional. We've heard from a lot of gentlemen about who've had bad partnerships go wrong. We do everything 50-50 down the middle, and I, you know, I'm sure there will be some times when we have our differences, but as of right now, our partnership is 50-50 on everything. He takes care of a lot of the marketing, the closing of the properties. I find the money, the deals, and a few other things. We kind of mix it up, so might be sloppy, but we kind of mix everything with each other. We play to our strengths, but we don't have a formal agreement that says, Eric, you get 39% if you split up with me and, you know, I want to do this. But that is our next step because, you know, let's face it, a year ago we didn't know what we were doing. Now we have more of a vision of it, and that's our next step. So, to be honest, you caught us in the middle of making that plan.
Okay. Now, interestingly, I was just discussing partnerships with Bob Norton the other day. We were doing one of the kiss flipping sessions, and one of the things that we talked about is that in partnerships, ideally you've got two people with complementary but different strengths, you know, so that you are, so that you're drawn to focus on different things that, you know, I'm strong where you're weak, you're strong where I'm weak, and we are better together because of that than we are separate. Do you guys find that that's the case in your partnership? Do you have similar strengths and weaknesses, complementary? How's that working?
Absolutely. Definitely a big, it sounds weird, but me and Eric are night and day different. But after teaming up and doing what we do, I'll give you a prime example. Eric used to enjoy his days up in the 5 feet of snow up north with snowmobiling and stuff like that. I like the summer and palm trees and stuff like that, but he's starting to like the palm trees and I'm starting to like the winter. So it's something that we just grow off each other. It sounds weird. It might just be that we're just hung in our business and we're just out there hungry and working well, but me and Eric do not have any problems as of right now, knock on wood, but we don't have any differences. And his strengths, like I said, were marketing and online and the internet. And if anyone out there that knows me, I do not do the internet well. I'm just not the computer guy. And he has really picked up that side of it, and it's just a huge help. You know, I do the books in our business, and, you know, we've actually hired out an accountant and a few other things now, but before we just played to what we were good at. I like numbers, and he likes everything. You know, it's something where we play to our strengths.
All right, Eric, let's hear your side of it.
No, you guys pretty much touched on everything where me and Steve are at. I mean, we do complement each other very, very well. You know, Steve's kind of more of a out-in-the-field, in-your-face, meet-and-greet people. Exactly what he said. I do a lot of the online marketing, make sure that everything's going good as far as our administrative and making sure our bottom line is there every month, keeping up the relationships with people, doing a lot of the follow-ups. I mean, I'm kind of a back-office person, JP. I focus a lot on, just customer relations, making sure people are satisfied, getting down to the nitty-gritty, making sure that we did meet the deadline, make sure the deal was everything that they thought it was, and more. And, you know, and in 30 days of closing up a deal with you, I'm going to be out at your rehab just making sure that everything's going well, our numbers are right on cue, and see if we can do some marketing for him on the backside as well.
But he always wasn't like that, JP. In the beginning, this guy would get on the phone with somebody and scare the living daylights out of him, and he kind of said, you know what, I'm going to work my butt off on customer relations. And it's starting to work now because, you know, let's face it, we were young and kind of scared before. And Eric would just try to bulldog people, and I would do the same, but we realized that's not how you get the job done. Just be you and play to your strengths and, you know, just stay at it.
You know, you guys know I started and ran our local RIA group here in Memphis for 6 years. And through doing that and through running REI tips, and just the different circles I moved in, I have known a lot of newer investors who were, I would consider, you know, within your first couple of years exposed to the business. I would call that a newbie investor. And one of the things I see a lot is people gravitating towards partnerships or trying to partner with someone, but it's not because they're looking for someone who is strong where they're weak or who complements them. It's because they're afraid to go out and do it on their own.
Yeah.
And you end up a lot of times gravitating towards someone who is very similar to you because you're similar and you kind of jive on the same things. So I think you guys are a great testimony to the strength of finding somebody to partner with who compliments you if you're going to do it. It can still be a challenging relationship. I would say most partnerships don't end up working out in the long haul. And, of course, you guys are going strong after 3 years, and every partnership ends, too, so I'm sure at some point you guys will go your separate ways when it makes sense to, but it's great to see a working model and to see it working well with the approach you've taken. So,
right. The number one thing, too, is we're honest with each other. If I'm slacking, I know it because he tells me. You know, so it's something
right.
That, you know, even though some people might argue with their partner, we have this thing called, do you want to be right or do you want to have peace? And whenever I'm mad or something get picked, Eric will kind of rub it right in my face. You know, normally people get really annoyed, but we always keep our goal in front of us. And I don't know if it's the way we think or we act. We just have fun at what we do. So, I mean, I'm sure there will be cork, but I pray to God that nothing will ever happen because it seems like it's rocking and rolling. We're just having a good time. And, you know, as long as it stays fun, I'm sure it's good. But we also were with each other during the bad times. We were with each other when we were flat broke. With each other, dreaming about dreams we never thought would be real. That's something we really love about each other, that we talk through bad and good, because I've heard a lot of partnerships, when it's good, but when it's bad, it's bad. And when it was bad, it was good. So hopefully, you know, keep playing to that.
That's awesome. One of the things I like the most about these interviews, you know, these kind of man-on-the-street interviews, is that they're just real. I mean, you guys are real people, and I think it's really helpful to have the ability to connect with people who are not necessarily, you know, have an agenda of selling a course. Now, I'm a big proponent of education. I think your education never stops in this industry, and I know from talking to you guys in the past that you feel similarly. One thing I'd like to ask, though, is what are some of the – you've mentioned Steve Cook and his book. What are some of the educational resources that have contributed to your success, the things that you've gone through that you would recommend to other people?
Well, one thing that I contribute a lot of our success to is when – back in 2006 when I got my real estate license, I looked in the newspaper ad looking for, you know, foreclosures. And there was this guy that I knew, this company was here for like 40, 50 years. It's a very old real estate company. And I called him, and I went inside to get a list of foreclosures. I said, hey, you know, I'm the guy that buys his house. He probably seen right through me. But he seen my passion. And it was weird because this older gentleman, he's about 75 years old, or 67 years old, I apologize. He took me and Eric under his wing because he's like, this guy has so much fire in his stomach, I just need to teach him how to be dependent on his own. And one thing we did is we found mentors. I know a lot of people speak about mentors, but some of our best mentors in our lives were free. We seek individuals that are older, have been there before us, that have done tried and true methods, and some of the best mentors are free. But one thing I can say about real estate related, you'd brought up Bob Norton a few times. He has been a big player in the way we do our business. You can kind of see our model almost matches his. But we have down, you know, we went to Florida down to Mike Collins, what I want to say is called Pitch Free Seminar. And we went down there and met Stan Miro. We met you guys. I finally got to see Steve for the first time because we've read his book many of times, and he kind of set the tone. But if we had to really put out some names out there, it'd be Bob Norton, Preston Ely, Stan Miro, Steve Cook. I mean, even just there was just a lot of individuals on your guys' circuit that we looked up to. But one thing we pride ourselves on is we only took from their program what we understood and knew we could do. You know, because I'm sure you see that a lot, where a lot of us get lost in what we're doing. We're learning so much. We're like, I want to do short sales, rehabs, you know, flip, whatever I want to do. We took the pieces that really mattered from these guys' program that we understood, and we just did our best with them.
Eric, what would you add to that?
Yeah, the critical thing on what Steve just said is a little bit of what everybody had to offer out there. You know, some people had to, you know, Steve said, do you want to go towards short sales? Do you want to do the wholesaling? We took just a little bit of what every single person had to offer and said, wow, I really like this strategy. I can implement this into my business. So maybe we would, you know, we would grab some guerrilla marketing from Than, and then we would do some customer service from Chris Dagler, Chris Chico. We just kind of incorporated what everybody had to offer out there and just said, you know, I don't think this is going to work, you know, with our business model. Let's just try and kind of touch base on this one, see what happens out. And we just played around with a little bit of what everybody's business model was and just factored it right into ours. You know, we're not reinventing the wheel here, so we kind of just replicated and implemented what other people were doing and just put it into, you know, to massive action.
Okay. All right, let me pull something out of what you're saying. excuse me. Let me tell you what you didn't do, and I congratulate you for not doing this, and which a lot of people fall victim to. First of all, I think every name that you mentioned, except for Daigle, who I also know, every name that you mentioned is someone who has some continuing education, but in the wholesaling arena. You guys see yourselves as wholesalers at your core, right?
Yes.
So while you may here and there dabble in some other things, primarily that's the engine that drives your boat, and everything that the lion's share of your attention has been focused on has been starting, building, growing, and refining your wholesaling engine. So that's important because, you know, there's a lot of different education that you mentioned there, but what you didn't do is spread your arms out as far as you can and try a little bit of every tactic and business model out there. And that is really entirely self-destructive in the long haul. You know, it's like when you're a new investor, you kind of spread your your wings wide and try and taste test a lot of different things to try and find out what your focus is going to be. But once you get it, once you figure out this is the thing that really jives with me, that really resonates with me, that fits my personality and fits what I want to be doing and my lifestyle, then you focus on that one thing and then making that one thing the very best version of itself that it can be. And that's what I'm hearing that you guys did. Even though you have continued to educate yourself, you know, when you've come across something that didn't fit what you've committed yourself to, you push that to the side and then added to, you know, only increasing what you have already committed to. Am I right?
Correct. And real quick, I do want to apologize for not mentioning Chris Daigle. He's our secret weapon. That guy, I love him. We talked to him personally on the phone. I forgot to mention him, but that guy is just an unbelievable individual because it sounds odd, JP, but the way we do our wholesaling and our business, we go to other markets to learn what other guys are doing, and we bring it because, you know, in other markets, let's just face it, guys are doing more creative stuff or different. So, I mean, and that's something that Chris Daigle opened us up to is, you know, go to these other markets. It's very important to us.
So let's say somebody's looking at you, and we probably let me actually check our time here. I don't know how long we've been doing this, but okay, we'll try and kind of wrap this up here kind of quickly. But I think some people who are going to listen to this, you know, whether it's in the near future or on down the road, they're looking at this picture that we've painted of your business and what you guys have been able to accomplish, and they're trying to figure out how to duplicate it themselves. What advice would you have for people who want to try to do the same thing, want to try and build the same thing that you guys have built so far?
I think the number one thing that helped me and Eric is we just bought the house. We found the top-selling REO agent. If you guys want to do foreclosures, let me just give you a quick idea. If I was to tell somebody, like we've been teaching a few guys in the area, like my brother and a few other individuals that wholesale with us, if they want to go the foreclosure route, just let me give this quick tip, is we went out there and looked. We are also agents, but we had some realtor friends, and we asked them, who is the top dog in this market for REOs? Who's selling the most? Who's listing the most? And the strange thing about it is we found the guy who sells all these houses to investors, and we went to that individual, and you know, we might not have been totally honest. We're just like, hey, we're investors. Might not have been as big as we thought we were in our head, but we were like, hey, we want to buy a house. And that individual got us the property accepted. And I can only tell you, when you get that first deal accepted, that's when the wheels start turning, either in panic or in necessity or in like, okay, I did it now. Now what am I going to do? So I would just suggest getting that first deal, even if it might sound weird, even if you fail and you don't sell it, you learn more because I think we've learned more on every deal that wasn't successful than every single deal that was successful. So
absolutely.
I would say just get out there and get that first house.
Eric, what would you say?
The only thing I can really add to that is, I mean, they say you make money when you buy a house and you realize it when you sell. So the hardest part of it has to be purchasing the house, right? I mean, if that's the case, you've already signed the contract, you've closed on it. Now just get out there and hit the streets, talk to a couple of rehabbers, talk to some landlords, and realize that profit. You've already signed your name, Providence is in motion. Get the wheels turning and go out and realize that profit.
All right. Now, there's something, Eric, I think it was you. I'm not sure. I've got a note here that I wrote it down from previously. But one of you guys have mentioned something called the 5 points of investing that you feel like you see a lot of other people doing wrong. Whichever one of you, could one of you guys clarify for me what those are and what you mean by that?
Well, let me throw out the first one. I'll let Eric follow up on the other one. Actually, interesting you said it, because just on our way to my home office just now, we realized what we did in the beginning and what set us over the rest of the crowd. There's a lot of wholesalers in this area or investors who are starting to do like guerrilla marketing. That some of our best marketing is really in-your-face marketing. And one number one thing I see wrong that investors do when they do market for buyers with bandit signs, I'm sure everyone knows what bandit signs are. If you don't know, find out, because they're a very big help in our business. We sell a lot of properties with bandit signs. But these individuals write a huge paragraph on the sign. Me and Eric will write cheap house, $29,000, in a phone number.
Yeah, and you guys use like a big, fat, black magic marker, right?
Keep it simple and get straight to the point. I mean, some of our signs say, quick sale, make offer, and then a phone number. Don't overthink yourself. and put too much into it because it's not necessary. In the real estate world, in our opinion, less is more when it comes to marketing.
Dare I say, keep it simple, stupid?
Right, there you go.
All right. What else?
You know, another thing that I noticed, JP, is it goes right back to the bandit signs. I mean, there is a lot of influx of new investors that are coming to our market here. And on any Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you can just see these corners are plastered. I mean, there's four different guys. One's got them on the pole. One's got them up against a stop sign. One's got them in the middle of the median. You know, these cities are really going to start cracking down on this. And I know it's guerrilla marketing. It works. But you got to be respectful of these communities. I mean, they're going to start calling. They're going to hand out fines. They're going to make it illegal. And they're just going to kind of wipe out that guerrilla marketing across the board. Another thing that I see a lot of other investors doing, we actually picked up a very, very good, young, motivated wholesaler that goes out and sells our properties now. And the reason he became so attracted to us, the last guy that he sold a house for, the guy gave him $500 and just said, hey, I appreciate you going out there, putting the signs out. You met with the buyer. You closed the deal. Here's $500. The first time he ever came over to us, we contracted a house to him. He sold it. I think he made over $4,000 just for making a couple of phone calls and meeting them over at the property. So we really do pride ourselves on going that extra mile, making sure our people are getting paid the full amount on all these deals.
That's awesome. Anything else? Any other additions?
Yeah, I guess one quick one. I would say, I mean, that's, I think we're adding towards number three, but a lot of these agents in our market, JP, are very knowledgeable, and I think sometimes when people think about wholesaling or real estate investing, they assume they got to be above the agent. And it sounds strange, but there are some agents out there who have done what we've done for a long time. They just never knew it was called wholesaling or whatever we call it. And what we've done is you seek those individuals out who have done a lot of deals. So one mistake that I see out there is a lot of guys try to be their own lone wolf and try to do everything themselves. We go out to the market and say, hey, we're out here. This is Michigan property. We're looking for agents or whoever else can give us knowledge on the market. And that's something that we did that was huge is we found some of the top-selling REO agents or top-selling listing agents. And every single house we buy, if we don't sell it through our own marketing, we always have them selling too because agents work for commission, so it's the best full-time free assistant. They in turn, they kind of help you out doing your business. They're your salesperson, and you can even borrow their team to close your deals out. If these agents have assistants, you can kind of borrow them. So what I mean by that is a lot of investors, I think, try to take the approach where they have to set up this whole system in their office so they are the guys. We try to go out there and find the best individuals and kind of, you know, piggyback off them and work with them. And they became, like, you know, some of our best friends, and they help us with our business. So reach out to people. Don't be the loan shark.
Fantastic.
Well, you know, like the loan shark, but the guy on his loan, you know, is all by himself.
And another thing, JP, I mean, if you are going to choose to go towards a foreclosure market and deal with REOs, you got to make your name very, very likable and presentable. I mean, there's not many people who call my phone that I look at and say, oh, I don't want to talk to this guy right now. When you're calling these offices, you absolutely have to recognize that these assistants are the gatekeepers to getting you deals. Now, you want to make their job as simple as you can. If you can look at the property, if you can do the paperwork, if you can handle everything and remove a lot of the stress out of doing a deal from them, they're going to be more than happy to come back to you and say, absolutely, you are going to get this deal. And another thing we deal with up here, I know there's a lot of guys who complain about some of the fees on these HUDs. I mean, there's high closing costs. You got compliance fees and REO fees. At the end of the year, I do know that it adds up. But don't worry about that small stuff. If you're the guy that calls and just says, what is going on? I got an extra $100 on here. I am willing to bet that the next time a deal comes up, they are going to think of that scenario and just say, you know what, even though there's nothing we can do about it, I don't even feel like explaining it to this guy that it's just part of a transaction, the cost of doing business.
Absolutely.
Well, in the short form, JP, me and Eric, we pride ourselves on taking a beating. We take a beating from our buyers. We take a beating from these banks. We just get beat up all over the place, but we enjoy it because it makes us money as well. Because you're a problem solver. You're not a real estate investor. You solve problems. And that's
absolutely
one thing that my mentor said is, go out there and become a solutions expert, and the rest will follow. So we pride ourselves on taking a beating.
That's a great word picture to describe it. All right, let's see. Is that I don't know. You guys hit a bunch of them at once there. Did we hit all five of those points?
Well, one last one that I can bring up is me and Eric in our business. You know, once again, it goes back to not being the top dog in the area. We go out with like a learner's attitude, and a lot of these people in this area see us as just hungry for knowledge and not just money. So one thing I can say, you know, it might not make sense in the beginning because you assume, you know, it's all about money. It does help, but go out there and do this business because you want to do it, not because you heard it's a good way to make the next quick dollar. So when people know you're out there and you have a general interest in what they do or their business or their employees or anything, just like Eric said, it's going to come back to you because they respect that you're still a human. Like you said, we're just normal guys, and let's face it, you become friends.
All right. I have two more questions for you guys, and then we'll wrap up. They really focus on two of the biggest pain buttons that I think most investors are feeling right now in this arena. One of them is lenders, and the other is buyers. Okay, and we've talked a little bit about your buyers already, but you guys went from having one lender to having four lenders in just an eight-month period. That's impressive, and I'm curious to know how you stirred them up. How did you inform them that you're somebody worth doing business with? How did you bring them to the surface, and then how did you engage them?
Well, I can tell you the first lender we ever had, it was a gentleman that was lending to other investors we knew, and it was some of the individuals that we were interning for.
Let me clarify. These are private short-term lenders, right?
Yes, these are just private individuals, and this guy happened to actually be a broker in the area. And he knew, it sounds weird, but a lot of the people we do business with maybe see them in us because we're younger and we have the fire. They really look into that. And this guy was like, you know, you guys are killing yourself out here for commissions and everything. I want to teach you guys how to, you know, invest as well. And what he did is he just said, go out and buy a house and I'll fund it for you. So we kind of fell on our face into our first lender, but it was because we were working so hard. That guy realized that, man, these kids are not going to give up. I'm going to give them the help that I wish I had. And another one is that some of our best lenders have been buyers on a home. I can give you a quick example about the fourth lender we just recently picked up, and it sounds strange. We bought the property for $35,000, and I called this gentleman, and normally we would sell him this home for $50,000 or $55,000. And normally we'd pay $45,000 for it. So we paid $35,000, we got an extra great deal. So I figured I'd offer it to him for $47,000. But I told him, can you give us a $40,000 earnest money? He's like, why so high? And I said, well, I can close in 48 hours, and we can have this deal done on Wednesday, and we're closing on Monday. But I want to let you know I'm going to use your earnest money deposit to fund my buy-in to my deal. So we turned our investor who's buying our home, we took their earnest money deposit and actually funded our buy-in of it. So we're actually creating lenders out of some of our buyers that are buying these rentals or these rehab flips.
Wow, that's solid.
And then Eric can kind of tell you about one of our guys that, an older gentleman that funded us on a three-unit apartment building and how he found him. So.
Yeah, I had kind of a unique experience with a lender. The gentleman had been in real estate when he was younger. He had started at the office that we had started in, so it was a very, very good reference point for him. But we had talked over the phone. He was actually calling on one of our properties that I had for sale. You know, I told him about the property, and, you know, this is another case where he was looking to buy this for one of his kids and then to sell it back to him on a land contract. It was another one of those scenarios. And I met him over at the property. You know, I had been talking to him for a few days in advance, and I gave him the whole laydown on how we operate and how the deal is going to go. And I get out of my car, and he just looks at me, and he said, gosh, you are certainly younger than I ever expected you to be. He's like, you're so knowledgeable. You know what's going on. And he said, how are you able to buy these houses at such a young age? And I said, well, you know, it's exactly with people like you, you know, those that have money in a 401k or in a savings account that's not earning you much money return, put it into some real estate, and I just go out and see guys just like you who got money just floating around, not making them the return that they would like to make, and we put that into a tangible item like real estate, so you can come by and see your investment at any time. He never did end up going forward with that deal for buying it with his son, but we did turn that guy into a lender, and we have since closed, I believe, three deals using some of his funds. So it's a very, very unique twist, and, you know, it really worked out well. He's absolutely, you know, he's got his money in a little bit more secure of a place, and he's really, like Steve said, we brought some of that fire out in him that he used to have when he was a younger guy selling real estate.
Okay, so really what I'm hearing, tell me if I'm right, I'm hearing that you didn't have a secret formula or, you know, some kind of blueprint for securing private lenders. What you did is you went out and you did business, and you added real, authentic, tangible value to the marketplace. And in
Correct.
The process of doing that, you connected with people. And what you created was money magnetism. The money almost kind of found you. I mean, you had your eyes open for it when it was there, and you recognized it. But you became money magnets rather than, you know, proclaiming to the world that you're money hungry.
Right. And I also, one thing that Eric did say, or and I mentioned as well, is we took reference to, wow, you know, we looked back and said, you know, Eric, we need some more money. How can we get more money? And we, and, you know, one thing that we do is we step back a lot and look at what we're doing and try to take value from what we've experienced. And me and Eric looked at the deals we did. We looked at our buyers. We looked at our lenders. And we said, you know what? All these guys were or are in the field of real estate. So one thing we did is to find money, we go to people who understand real estate. You don't want to go to McDonald's to find a hard money lender. It's just not going to happen. You know, well, you might, but, you know, I haven't found one. So what we do is we went to the people that handle money or handle real estate, and we figured we cut out, you know, most of the challenges. You know, it hasn't worked the best always, but one thing that prides us is that we're knowledgeable in real estate, and these guys see it in us that we work towards this, and they also know real estate, so it makes us feel better that they feel better, and that we all feel better.
Yeah, absolutely. It, I'll just add my two cents. There's personally, there's three ways that I've secured all the private funding I've ever used. One is just being connected at my REIA group. You know, just connecting with people and letting them see and know what I do, and not constantly asking people for money. I'm not afraid to say, hey, I'm looking for good money, but, you know, I wasn't the guy standing up at every meeting saying, I still need to borrow some money. but I you know, very similar to what you said, I just was connecting with people and being trying to live principles that made me a money magnet. And and I saw, you know, people began to come to me. A doctor came to me at one point and said, you know, I'm going to come to these meetings because I want to get into real estate investing, but I don't really have the time for it. And basically he wanted to kind of live vicariously through me by letting me use his money. another tactic that I've used that I stumbled upon, I wasn't even trying to do it, but I was talking to my closing attorney at one point, and he mentioned another transaction that involved another investor. And I just happened to say, well, who funded that transaction? And he mentioned some guy's name, and I'm like, well, I don't know who that is. Oh, well, he funds a lot of the investors' transactions locally. Well, can you give me his number? Sure. So a lot of people don't think about that, but once you get a relationship with a title company or a closing attorney and the people, like specific people who are in those offices, they know who's funding transactions with other players. And they'll talk to you if you have a good, strong relationship with them, and they trust you, and they know you, and they like you. They'll share that information, and there's some really valuable contacts that can be had through that.
I can vouch for that, JP, because actually in the past week and a half, we didn't want to add this, but our title company, well, actually we work with a few in the area, but one of our title companies have came to us last week, and we're in the process of doing exactly what you said. It was just very shocking, but they're like, we do a lot of deals, or you guys do a lot of deals, and we know this guy needs a return on his money. Would you be interested in meeting with this guy? And it was very odd, but we'll let you know how it goes because it just happened to us, what you just said.
Nice. All right, last question, and then we're going to touch on buyers here with this one. It's kind of the ultimate question people want to answer right now. And you guys have hinted at some things here, but let's really drill on it for a second. How do you suggest wholesalers go about finding buyers in this market? And you guys specifically are dealing with a lot of repeat customers. But, you know, I didn't mention this earlier, and I meant to. Landlords right now, they're having a challenge getting financing because Fannie Mae's cutting back on their limits, FHA. You know, there's as right at this particular moment in time, a lot of the traditional real estate investor financing is tightening its belt. And so there's a lot of people who would love to buy some income property who are kind of struggling with how to get them financed. But, you know, you guys are dealing with these buyers. how are you dealing with them, and how are you acquiring them, keeping them repeat customers?
JP, this is Eric. Aside from the guerrilla marketing and putting bandit signs out there and networking and going to our RIAs, what we did in the beginning to find our first buyers, we actually, I mean, since we are agents, even if you're not an agent, get access to the MLS. I mean, agents are all over the place. We got on the MLS and started doing reverse searches for people who are paying cash for houses. What we would do is we would set up our search and go, you know, 30, 60, or 90 days back and say, okay, we see this guy. He's bought a house in the past 30 days. He's obviously got to be rehabbing it. Let's take a drive-by, and sure enough, there's a dumpster in the driveway. Let's walk up and talk to this guy, you know, and it just so happens that if somebody's buying one house, chances are they're ready to buy another. And it's kind of across the board. I mean, even Bob touches on this, and it's very, very huge to what we did when we first got into business. We just started reverse searching for the MLS, looking for cash buyers, and we drive by. If there's a for rent sign, you know, he's a landlord, and he probably likes cleaner properties. If that's what you have, call him and let him know exactly what you're looking to do. I mean, the verbiage that you need to tell him is a little bit tricky. I mean, me and Steve kind of spend a lot of time role-playing, going back and over exactly what to tell him. Because being that there is an influx of people coming into the market, they get a lot of calls now. But if you can just bring up a scenario, bring up the deal, have them meet you at the property. Don't just tell them to run by there when you get a chance. Set a time, set something in concrete, and say, meet me at this house. That way they put a face to the voice, they know who you are, you exchange business cards, and you call that guy. If he doesn't buy this deal, that doesn't mean he won't buy the next one. Call him over and over and over and over. One thing that I like to pride myself in is, I mean, I got about five guys in my back pocket that I can call and sell just about any single deal that we have. It's usually gone. We don't even have to market it. We don't have to do much. They do expect a little bit of a discount because they do buy in volume, but we really try and take care of them. I mean, we throw them very good deals. You know, some of our rentals that we do want to keep, we just throw it in and give it to them as a nice bone and a nice bonus for them. So we pretty much started just reverse searching the MLS, finding cash buyers.
That's solid. That's a solid tip. Anything else you would add to that?
Steve, you got anything to add to that one? Steve might have jumped off here. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, let's assume for the moment we lost Steve unless we hear him chime in.
Hey, I'm back on. My phone was okay. It wasn't mute. One thing I do want to add to that real fast is one thing on getting those buyers is, I know he brought up that we go to these rehabs, but it's actually we do 7-day cash sales. We try to look for everything that sold cash within the past week, because 30 days, we look for those people who have bought, which is a huge thing, like Eric said. But we try to narrow it down to who closed last week, because chances are they're just getting into their rehab. And we always drive these neighborhoods and call every for rent sign that's in that neighborhood. And that's something that we learned from Bob Norton. But you'd be shocked once you drive a neighborhood and call a few rent signs, you know what these guys are buying, and chances are what you're buying is probably less than what they paid for theirs. So one thing we do is we do what's called reverse prospecting. We look for the guys who are buying today, not, you know, a long time ago.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, I guess let's wrap this up. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you spending a few minutes with me here on the phone in the middle of the workday. Thanks for letting me twist your arm behind your back and coax you into it. It's been very informative, great man-on-the-street interview. I'm sure that my listeners are going to find it insightful, and I just appreciate it. You guys have any closing remarks?
I mean, I can say that it's something that we are hungry for knowledge, and we do not quit when it comes to stuff. You can ask Bob Norton, JP, if we would have known your email address and you might not have known us, you could see how persistent and annoying we could be trying to get hold of you. One thing I can say is, don't give up. If you want to work with somebody, or you dream about meeting a wholesaler or some big shot in the industry, you know, nothing against you guys, JP, but we used to think you guys were untouchable. And now we're getting busy, you know, and you guys are calling and talking with us, and we're calling to talk to you, and the phone actually gets answered. So number one is become valuable, learn how to become valuable, but also reach out for those guys because, you know, like I said, we thought you guys were untouchable, but you're just like us. You're a normal guy, and these people answer their phone. So don't be afraid, and do not give up. Just don't give up.
JP, I just want to give a personal thanks to you and all that you've contributed to the real estate investing, you know, to the community here. You guys, just like Steve said, when we first got in, we're like, man, these guys seem like we will never be able to achieve this status. And, know, and here we are doing a brief interview in the middle of the day. But I want to send something for me and Steve, just, you know, to you and all the things you've contributed to real estate and, the, you know, the free gifts and bonuses that you do get out to help people. It really shows that you are a successful person out there still giving value to the community.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. I don't know how or why it happened, but I sort of feel like I've found my part of my volunteer calling, I guess, in a sense, as an advocate for my fellow real estate guy and gal. So I received that warmly. Thank you. All right. Well, this has been Eric and Steve and JP, another episode of Real Estate Investing Undressed. Thanks, guys. We'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks, JP. Mark.